When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Light the fuse.
Well, this is not mission difficult, Mr. Hunt. It's mission impossible. Difficult should be a walk in the park for you.
It's all got to do with the rabbit's foot.
Please don't make me go through you.
Sir, Hunt is the living manifestation of destiny, and he has made you his mission.
Kittredge, you've never seen me very upset.
And you really think we can do this?
We're going to do it.
Welcome to Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast. I am Drew Taylor, joined, as always, by the man, the myth, the legend, Charles Hood. How you doing, Charles?
I feel good, Drew. How do you feel?
I feel great. I mean, I'm here. I'm with you. We've got a great episode. I mean, there's not a lot to complain about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you sound good. I mean, you got a little. There's a little bit of sing-songy vibe there while you're talking. It's good. Sounds like you're excited.
I'm drinking my liquid IV. I've got a feeling spicy. Yeah, great. Not a sponsor, but just, you know, a good product. I just wanted to say.
Okay. Cool.
What's going on with you?
I'm great. Everything's good, man. I mean, I got a nice adjustment from the chiropractor today. Everything's great. I feel like a brand new man.
Your spine is aligned. Yes.
So everything's good. You know, I'm just excited. I'm super excited to have James Mather back on the show, as we had him a year ago, but also for part two of this interview. For people to hear this, it's just, you know, the scope, the scale of the sound work in this movie. It's pretty massive. It's quite an undertaking, I'm sure, for him to take on all this. And it's just awesome to dig into it and hear about the work. You know, we love to highlight the work of these amazing craftsmen and craftswomen who make these movies.
Yeah, he is also just a lovely guy. And during the interview, his wife was making dinner and I could see him kind of looking towards the kitchen. When are we going to get cut off? When is he going to eat his dinner? But I think it all worked out. Timing worked. But he always looks very cozy wherever he is. And he had a nice fire going. It was lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Yes, it was a nice little fireplace behind him. I don't know if that part made it into the actual interview, but we did comment on that at one point. There's a very nice cozy fireplace behind him.
Is there anything that we need to set up in this episode, Charles?
I don't think so. We just have more great stuff just talking about Dead Reckoning Part 1. I'm excited about some of the things that we get into, and it's a good one.
Well, if you want to hear the actual work that James has done, you can rent or buy Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning digitally, and you can also buy it on physical media, which we always love. You've had kind of a physical media renaissance, I feel like, in the last few months.
Yes, I
kind of dropped off a little bit.
I've got somewhat with your urging. I feel like I've been collecting 4Ks this year, and it's been an awesome time. I used to keep all my discs hidden away in those Case Logic zipper, you know, packs, and I had, you know, they hold like 200 discs or whatever. But now I've put them back into their cases, and I've got a closet that displays them all. And it's been great. I'm all in on physical media. It's been great to watch discs instead of streaming recently. Yeah.
Well, if you want to watch streaming, though, I will say that the first six Mission Impossible movies are on Paramount Plus right now.
Okay. Yeah. Now that I say I prefer disc, I will say that there is a good amount of streaming that's happening in my home as well, because it's just so convenient.
Yes, and there's so much stuff.
Just to be a total hypocrite, I'll go back. But there's just, you know, some of my favorite movies I've got on 4K, and I've got, it's very easy for me to just press a button and just watch it But it's like, I want to put in a little extra effort and go to that closet, get the disc, put it in, appreciate it at its highest possible quality.
Including Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, which you have on 4K disc. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think James would want you to play that disc as well. So do that after you listen to this interview, and we'll be back afterwards. But the movie is interesting in that it's shot very differently than the other ones. There's a lot of close-ups.
Yeah.
There's less emphasis on sort of geographic relationships between characters. And I was wondering if you were called upon to kind of establish those things that maybe in the past would have been established visually, but are now on you in the audio mix.
Yeah. I mean, everywhere you go, from the Desert Storm, where you kind of... It's really a music opportunity where the reveal of the dunes, and at one point it was almost Lawrence of Arabia-esque. It was just this wow, expansive, and Lorne had done this beautiful sweeping score, and that's, we just sit back, you know, take the music out, and there's a few gusts. That's about it. And you get to, okay. Oh, I really hope the music's going to come in. I don't know what else we can put here. And they do, and it's beautiful. And then it's the same with Venice. You know, you get there and you go, well, what do we know about Venice? There's bells. There's bells everywhere. It's an amazing city for bells. So we have umpteen different churches all in vision, but the whole point of Venice is just what's happened and the come down from what's just happened and them regrouping and considering their options. And it's not about the place. And that's what I think this one is doing. That's why you're right. This one is different because of it's not like we're setting up a new place, therefore a new chapter in the adventure. It's like the place that we're going to is a haven or a respite or a jump off into the next chapter. But the reveals and the scale aren't necessarily as prescriptive as they have been in the past. They're just much more in the DNA of the storyline. And I think that's where this film is different. The storyline and the drama throughout feels much more, I don't say it, but it's way less episodic. It doesn't have that kind of right there. It's like, no, we're just moving through with these guys and they're taking us on this really tricky journey.
Was there anything special about the bomb at the airport? The like with the kind of like almost like slot machine wheels that go around. Like, what were the sounds you used for putting that together?
I don't know why. I don't know why in this version, this movie, and we didn't do it in the others. But I kept trying to introduce kind of a hectic sound element throughout the movie. So when we're seeing Ethan's glasses vision, and you've got these kind of little signatures of who's got what, where, and when, and where it's gone now. And I kept trying to put in this hectic sound. I don't know whether I've just been using my phone or vibrate more, and I've got used to this kind of and this. So it's not necessarily a sound; it's a tapping that you, a sensation that alerts you. And it didn't work really in those areas. It just didn't seem to. It's like we know the language of things and we expect to hear a sound that works with those. And so I kind of did. I lost that battle. But the bomb was the perfect opportunity to go hectic. It was like it's got the hectic sound has got a slightly mechanical element to it. And so it felt very much like, oh, that's nice. That kind of working on the cogs. Let's just have it when it's spinning. Let's have a little servo in there as well. So we're kind of describing this very slick motor, mechanical, harking back a little bit to Turing and the old Second World War computers that were used, of the cogs turning. And then it was like the last ingredient. We've got it going. It's good. And then it was like, should we try the entity in there as well? And so it's like the entity has become this elastic band, which is so finely stretched. And we got it, and we're like, yes, okay, let's just have it on those little bits, a little bit of entity on the last bits of the cogs turning. So this, again, you know, it's like going back, looking back at the feast you've been, going, oh, we'll put a bit on there and a bit on there, and it was just a pinch on there, and everything that could possibly have a nuance had it in one degree or another. And that bomb was like, it's the entity, so let's make it the entity. And that just, again, the haptic sound kind of had to take a back seat because the entity was doing a better job. But we had a lot of fun with that. And it was also like, let's try not to make it a bigger deal than it is. Actually, it's just doing its thing. It's not changing pitch as it gets closer to the final reveal. It's not, you know, it's not a music box. It's not, it is just doing its thing. It's just dials turning. We don't know what the end thing is. And the music is helping us get the suspense that McHugh wanted.
What about the 80s version of the IMF that we get to see? We get to see a little bit more of it on the deleted scenes, but you know, all the tube televisions and all of that. What was it like creating that sound?
That was fun, man. That was so much fun. So much time spent on YouTube. I was going through all my old favorite shows. I was a bit where Steve Austin title scene, and it's got this kind of hard disk teleprinter sound. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. $6 Million Man, let's watch that. And I played it, and I was like, oh, it's brilliant. It's like so crusty, and it's so analog. And so that opened a whole bank of like, what else were they? And so we just go through old TV shows and, you know, telephones, everything. They're, unfortunately, we couldn't feature all the sounds that we wanted to because there was dialogue. We're like, oh man, it's talking. There's great big quarter inch tape. We went to an old studio that still had an Atari, like 3-inch recording thing, and you press stop and it's like, it takes forever to unstop and wind it, and then you press go and it goes as it takes off again, and we had all this. So much fun playing around with nerdy stuff like that. And enough of it came through. I hope enough of it came through. But again, it was a longer scene at one point, and we had a moment, a bit like the film, really.
I still remember the like static sound of my old tube television growing up. Like,
oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh. And it just, and it's when you turn things off and they start to crackle. I mean, lights do it still. It's a pinking car engine sound that everything's cooling down, and it's, yeah, I love all that stuff. I love that.
Can you talk about the motorcycle jump? I mean, that moment when that plays in theaters.
Who saw that coming?
I mean, when that jump happens, and then it just like, what sounds do you have in there? Because it really drops out, and then you can hear people gasping. You can like, it was such a fun moment to experience in the theater. You know, what was that always? And was that always the plan to kind of cut everything out there, or what was here?
Yeah. The dynamic shift had to be as big as we could make it. A bit like the Halo jump, you know, where he jumps out of the plane and then gets hit by lightning. And we had to do that similar kind of device of how far to zero can we take it before we cut back in. And it's weird when you do a scene that people know and expect to see, and know it's in the movie, but obviously they don't see it in the version that you're doing, that the final version. There's so many side stories to this scene. I'll leave the fact that my bike got nicked and my insurance company didn't pay out because they thought I'd used it in the stunt of the
clip.
I'm like, I'm not that daft. We used it to record the sound. We didn't drive it off a cliff. That's Tom. We don't do that. So the whole, you know, we love the vehicles in these movies because they are so testing and taxing. You've got to make them absolutely like, totally plausible. You can't make them sound, you can't have a rev on a decelerate hand move. You can't have, it's just got to be absolutely bang on, because everybody who rides a bike is going to know exactly that's not right the moment they see it. And that's like blown it. It's got to be twitch, you know, throttle perfect. And that scene, the getting the texture of the bike going over the ground, that was tricky. Getting it building up was, I mean, it's music. That's the only thing that can give you that wow, that moment. But as it goes down, We just introduced this tiny whine. It's like this pathetic kind of bike trying, please, I don't want to hurt myself. It's just, and it's like, should we have some flapping cloth for Ethan as he's falling? It was like, yeah, we can do it with that. And the bike, I think, is the only sound you really hear. You've got some air, which is really neutral. And it kind of helps you see, wow, that's a big space. And then you get this tiny thing. And we then cut to Ethan's free falling. And we're playing it to Tom. And he's listening to it remotely because he had a theatre where he was. So we were dialing in our theatre so he could hear the mix coming from our stage. And he's like, guys, it's not loud enough. And I'm like, okay, we'll push it up 3 dB. No, guys, honestly, it's not loud enough. Okay, and, you know, we're a little bit tired, I think. And our effects mixer just went, all right, there you go, poof, and whacked the fader up. And it was like, that's Tom, and it's not, we're going to break the studio. Tom, you can just hear his voice coming out of the speaker back to us, that's it, that's exactly what it's like.
We're going, no. Is that the shot when it cut, like, because I was going to ask about like what the insane moment that happens is after the jump, they like cut to like a close up of Tom when he's falling, yeah. And he's like, I'm trying to get away from this mountain. Is that the part you're talking about right there?
Yeah.
Is that actual recorded dialogue from the jump or is it ADR? Yeah. Did he record it later?
It's a combination. In order to dial into it, you needed to have a little bit of ADR at the beginning just to get that energy. But as Tom said when he was doing it, because we said, you know, we really should get a clean version just so that we can get people know what you're saying, you know, let's get the audio. And he's like, I'm never going to get the energy that I've got when the wind is blowing in my face and I'm trying to shout over the wind that is for real. So we took the line that he recorded and we just ended up shaving it just so that it's the beginning, so you get that he's saying something, but weirdly you kind of dial into it because you know it's there. And you know, the mixer did some, Chris did some great work squeezing out as much of the distortion, but actually the distortion helps you believe the reality of it.
Yeah.
The reality of it is, and weirdly, I think what Tom was reacting to when he was listening to the mix was that the energy of his voice sounded slightly false to the impact of the wind on the cup. So he said, I'm telling you guys, when you're falling that fast, the wind is deafening. It's ripping your ears. So the moment he heard that wind at our exaggerated level, he's like, yes, because I wouldn't shout that loud if it wasn't that loud in my face.
Right.
And you know, he's the only actor, producer, you know, that I've worked with who does stunts like that and knows what it should be. And so you've got to go, yeah, okay, I've never done it. I don't know what it sounds like, but he has. I'll take his word for it. So that was a great, it was funny. I thought it was like, oh, this is great. This is actually comedy. The timing is great. The demise and virtually zero explosive wind, the fact that you don't hear the bike crash land on the rocks, which we had at one point, and it was like, oh no. Oh no.
Wow.
Because there were six of them down there. Six of these bikes. But that was great. That was a really good, there were loads of great moments where you push the envelope a bit more than you normally would, and you watch it go, oh, actually it's really cool. I get it. I believe in there. I really believe it.
We'll be back with more from James Mather after the break.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
Well, I wanted to ask about the train sequence, obviously, and also how many train whistles were too many train whistles? Because there is a lot of whistling.
Oh, there were so many more. Yeah, there were more.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we had, it was a big deal getting the right whistle. That took a while, and that took a lot of auditions and demos and experimenting, because obviously the train whistle has so many different reasons to exist. It's trying to tell one story. A runaway train out of control. We know it's the guard, blah, blah, blah. So it should be on turns, but it also dramatically on a long shot where Ethan's looking down and the train whistles because it's atmospheric and it's beautiful. But it's a very different quality to the whistle then than it is when you're right up to the train going past and the whistle goes off and it's like, rah, really strong. But it had to be the same whistle. So that was a test to try and find something that resonated with both close-up urgency and distant, nice, beautiful, wow, what a place. That was the first test. There were certain shots that were completely obvious. That's got to be there. That's got to be there. It's got to be there. And then it was like, do we have it there? When the White Widow wakes up and then collapses again, do we have a whistle there? Is there a reason? Is that story? So we sat with McHugh because we all kind of got used to the idea of it being in certain places. And then it was, are we overcooking this? Or are we undercooking this? So McHugh and I sat there. We just went, right here. Let's try one there. Okay, let's try one there. Let's try. Okay, what about here? I don't know. Let's try it. And it's one of those things, until you run it as a scene, a long scene, you go, what have we done? It's just ridiculous now. And you go, okay, all right. So we've gone too far to the right. Let's find our Goldilocks moment. Let's bring back. And actually, we could have had 3 and it wouldn't nowhere near enough. We'd have missed plot points. We could have had 30, obviously way too much. And whatever it was, the 12 that were in there seemed at the time to have their moment in different perspectives. And there might have been a few too many. There might be. But that's.
I mean, you got an epic train scene. I think you need the whistles. You got to have them.
You got to have it.
Charles is a real apologist for this whistle. I'm going to say that you are right, James. There were a little too many whistles. And I think that.
I don't know. I'm subjective. I don't know.
Obviously, that's the thing that people are focused on while enjoying the most amazing train sequence of all time. The
incredible train sequence. Yeah. Incredible train sequence. I mean, there were a lot of aspects of that also. The train becoming a runaway train, the train losing control and starting to go faster and faster. And those, you know, it's not until you start trying working that scene and making that storyline parallel to Ethan's urgency to get help Grace, to get the key. There's all these urgent moments all building together. And you have to really sculpt carefully so that it's not just a barrage of everybody hurtling towards the same, you know, finale. And it's a huge scene that finishes in such style with such cojones and jeopardy. And, you know, it was hard to think of a scene, how anything was going to top some of the scenes that we'd done. And then when that came in, it was like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. This is the next universe stuff. This is detail. For me, the kitchen, the climb through the kitchen carriage is one of the most fun sound scenes I've ever had the pleasure of working with, because it's bonkers and it's hilarious. Squishing lemons and sliding on fat and pulling, you know, it's just like, why would this exist? so much fun with that, and you know, Tom and McHugh and Eddie was so invested in the way that this was going to work and the perspectives and the, you know, how perspectives were going to shift when we're outside and Grace is climbing around through the carriages to get to the front before it goes off the bridge, all that dynamics and all those, and you are working in, you know, tiny chunks over and over, tiny chunks, and you listen to it at the end and you go, wow, that's just like, it's nonstop. It's fabulous. I was always a huge fan of the Wallace and Gromit scene where Gromit's laying tracks as the train's going.
Yes.
And this has gone there. This is definitely next level.
That's how Simon Pegg described to us how these movies are made.
Well, there is that, yes. There is. That's part of the fun of it. It's part of new the deal, and then we just get to do it over and over and enjoy it.
Well, we've heard that there was a car that was taken out of the train sequence for pacing issues.
Oh, wow.
I was wondering if that impacted how you designed that sequence.
I didn't miss it. There was talk of taking out the kitchen carriage. That I would have been mortified at.
Yeah, I would not have stood for that.
No, absolutely not. But there was, yeah, I think there was a car. I think there was one taken out. I mean, it was, the thing is, obviously, once they started piling in the cutaways on the exterior of the bridge crumbling and collapsing, along with the carriages landing, that's when it became like another carriage swinging down and landing. That's kind of like, we know what's going to happen, but we need them. We've got to have that story of one after another. And I think that was when it was decided. And it doesn't feel curtailed or shortened unnecessarily.
The pacing feels just right.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe it would have been fun for you if there was one carriage that was like transporting zoo animals. That would have been fun. Design the sound for that.
The piano is enough.
Yeah.
Dogs.
Like a circus. Dogs. Yeah. Dogs. Yes.
I'm going to suggest it for the next one.
Yes,
you gotta have a cage for the dog somewhere.
You gotta give our dogs Rusty and Nova the best shot for the next one. You gotta put them all over the next movie because if it can't just be one spot, because then they'll cut it out and then they gotta make it in.
That's right.
I reckon. I think you just lay them out on a keyboard and you do the whole mission theme with them.
Oh yes, yes. We'll talk to Lauren about that. We'll see if we can.
Yeah, have a word.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're back at it on 8.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to even bigger challenges? Is there any way to top this one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, every film's going to be, every story's got a different reason. And I think these guys are masters of their craft, all of them. And
that includes you.
Thank you.
Yes.
What little I know, and I'm being very careful there, I am so excited. I'm so excited about getting our teeth into the same place that we were on the last one in terms of the build and the sculpt and the adrenaline. And I know that, you know, after meeting with the guys today, they are too. So there's a cumulative excitement about working with this one. I think, you know, there's also the luxury and the joy of working on this without having to think about another one right happening, you know, very close to the end of it. This has got more creative space and opportunity around it. I'm not saying that that is a good or a bad thing, but I think it just, we know what's expected and we know what we are going to have to deliver. And it's super, super exciting. It has changed. The style and the devices used to have kind of changed in a way. I really love the way it's changed with the more people and the more narrative through. It makes the action more emotional, strangely, from our point of view. It feels like the most absurd action scenes are actually incredibly emotional and very compelling and very, you feel very immersed within it and affected by it. So I'm super excited.
Any malfunctioning electronics we can look forward to? And
I don't know. I don't okay. know. Okay. It's, okay. If it happens, you'll hear it.
Okay. Well, James, thank you so much. It was so great to get to chat with you again. And we are so excited about the next one. If we're in England, we're calling you up and
please do
making you show us your toys.
Yeah. I'd love you to come and visit the studio anytime. It'd okay. be great.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks so much, James.
Nice to see you guys. Take care.
We're back. Sad to see James Mather go, but we were, you know, given a little ray of hope at the end of that interview when I said, when we said, we'll come to England and we'll bother you in your shop. How about that? He said, yes, come on out.
Yes, we got to do that. That would be so fun. It's always a pleasure to talk to James now that we've had him on twice, and hope to have him on again, you know, after Dead Reckoning Part 2. We'll be talking to him again, I would hope. And yeah, I hope everybody understands the amount of work and care that goes into making the sound for these movies.
I would want to go to his office and see if I could add some sound effects, Charles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Walking across rocks.
I want to do the Foley. Like, yeah. I want to go to a little Foley booth and, like, you know, rub my feet in the sand and stuff and give them some goods. Or, like, you know, when they, like, for, like, sword stuff, they'll, like, hit swords into watermelons and stuff. Like, I want to do some of that stuff.
Yes. And then we can save some of those sounds for our radio show.
Oh man, yeah, we got when we see him in England, we got to get him on board in putting together a small sound effects library for us for our radio show.
Yeah, I think that'll be great. Yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting, you know, hearing him talk about all of the sound that went in. You know, you think about the big kind of blockbustery stuff, but there's so many subtle things that are in this movie that are just so outstanding and so maybe easy to overlook, but like when you get, you know, dig into it, it's just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I loved hearing about the bomb in the airport, because that's just that sound of the like gears of the thing, like, you know, the kind of like little like whatever, it's like almost like a slot machine, like the thing going around. Like, I just love the sound of that. It was fun to hear him talk about that, and it was cool to hear him compare the motorcycle jump to the Halo jump with the sound cutting out. I think that was what he was compared to, the Halo jump.
Yes.
But then my favorite part of that was hearing the story about Tom Cruise wanting it to be super loud when they cut into, because he experienced it. He knows what that actually sounded like, because he was there and did it, because there's no stunt double. It's Tom Cruise doing it. And, you know, yeah, it's just funny to hear how he was like, yeah, we put it up super loud, not like thinking there's no way. And then Tom Cruise being like, yes, that's it. That's what it sounded like.
So great. He's such a great guy, and he was very generous with his time. Yeah, those are all the sound secrets, I feel like, of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. We got him.
Yeah.
We got him, baby.
Yeah, good stuff. So anyway, thank you, everybody, for this ride that we've been on. This has been amazing. We got more episodes coming up.
We do. I want to remind everybody that there are brand new episodes of Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. Please follow us on social media at Light the Fuse Pod on whatever platform you are on. I will leave that ambiguous, but I will let you find us. We're everywhere.
At Light the Fuse Pod. That's us, Light basically the Fuse Pod. Everywhere.
Everywhere. Light the Fuse Pod. And please be sure to like, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you are listening to this podcast, because it really helps us out. And you know what? Just tell people about it. Just drop it into conversation. If you see an opening, just do it. You know,
be casual about it, though. You know, like, try to find a good sneaky way to bring up podcasts in general, maybe, and then be like, oh, wow, you know, there's a podcast I'm really loving that I've been listening to called Light the Fuse. You should check it out.
And then someone will stare at you and they'll say, you know, the Mission Impossible franchise. Then you go into an explanation.
Yep.
They get really worked up. They get excited about the possibility. And then they come back and here we are. So we'll be here. Come on back.
Yeah, and we've got, as we've said before, we've got back catalog episodes coming up. We've cleared some awesome interviews coming up that you're going to be able to listen to. And right here on the main feed, we're very excited about that. And some other surprises on the way.
All right, Charles, is that it? Are we ready to go?
Yeah, I think we're ready to go. Goodbye, right. Everybody.
Goodbye.
Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast, is produced by Charles Hood. That's me, and Drew Taylor. Our supervising producer is Abby Smith. This episode was edited by Luke Burson, with music by Kevin Blumenfeld. Original Mission Impossible themes by Lalo Schifrin. This podcast is a production of Paramount Pictures. All rights are reserved. This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.